Hello, everyone, and welcome to my podcast, Body Justice. I started this podcast because I believe that all bodies are good bodies. All bodies are deserving, worthy, and all bodies are whole just as they are. In today's world, it's ever hard to embody this as our truth. My mission is to create a space to process body image, eating disorders, and relationships through a justice-oriented lens. I'm a licensed therapist in California and an eating disorder survivor myself. I know what it's like to be at war with myself and also to find peace again. Thank you for being here, and I look forward to being your host. Hey everyone, welcome back to Body Justice. Today we are on episode 50 and we are in season 3. I'm so excited. Today we're going to talk with my really good friend and colleague, H. Coakley. We have been sharing clients for years now, and H is an awesome justice-oriented dietitian who has a wealth of knowledge and insight and wisdom, and I'm really excited for you all to hear their perspective and knowledge on the topic of GI issues in recovery. So a lot of us in recovery, it's so common, we will have aches and pains and even chronic illnesses related to our GI tract that get complicated in the recovery process. And it's not as easy as just eat when you are also facing chronic pain and issues with digestion. So we're going to get into the nitty-gritty today. We're going to talk about poops. We're going to talk about fart. We're going to talk about bloating, things that you might be embarrassed to bring up with your team or even people in your life. And we don't want it to be so taboo because this is a common barrier in recovery. And H has so much knowledge in terms of what's actually happening in the body and tools that we're going to provide you all to hope alleviate a little bit of this. And I think overall, just developing compassion for all the things your body is going through when struggling with an eating disorder or an eating disorder recovery. So without further ado, let's get to it. Just a reminder, you can find me on Instagram at bodyjustice.therapist and my private practice website, www.eatingdisorderocdtherapy.com. And let's talk to H. So H, can you tell us a little bit about you, how you identify, and what you're passionate about?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Allison, for having me on your podcast. I really am so glad to be in conversation with you. So I'm H. Coakley. I am a dietitian working primarily in eating disorders and disordered eating for marginalized populations. My practice is called Pendo Wellness. And yeah, I'm just really passionate about the work that, you know, we both do. And yeah, I think those are my I'm queer, non-binary dietitian, and I use they, them pronouns.
Awesome. Can you tell listeners what Pendo Wellness is all about? Because I know it has a specific meaning and it's really cool.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So the name derived, and it's Pendo with an O, not panda, which is often mistaken. So the Pendo is what's called a clonal colony of aspen. In Utah, it spans several thousand acres in Utah and Colorado. And what it is actually an interconnected organism. So from above, from our point of view, it looks like a bunch of separate trees, but it's actually a interconnected colony. And it's a very ancient organism. And that is the name of it. It is called the Pendo. And I just really love that image of this idea of things feeling separate on the surface, but underneath are kind of like intricately linked together. So when I heard that, I decided I wanted to weave that into my practice and how I think about it, for sure.
I love that.
And about bodies. Yeah.
Yes. I love that so much. And it's like core to any sort of like social justice movement is this interconnectedness, interdependence is really the foundation, having that. And we are all connected, you know, whether we realize it or not. That's really awesome.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah, especially that sense of like really feeling that when we all seem so separate on the outside. Yeah.
It's like a
But yeah.
reminder that we like thrive when we are connected and honor that.
Exactly.
Which,
Exactly.
for full transparency for all the listeners, H and I are really good friends and we often share
Yeah.
clients together. So
Yes.
we decided to do this episode to talk about trauma and GI issues and how that impacts eating disorder recovery. I think I was the one that found you, right, H? I found you years ago now, like maybe 3 years
Yeah.
ago.
Something like that. Yeah. That's about how
Yeah.
long I've been practicing. So probably a little less than 3 years. Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember I was just searching for any justice-oriented dietitian that does eating disorder work. And thankfully, we've been like such an awesome fit. So I'm really excited to have you here.
Me too.
Can you share with listeners, a little bit about GI issues in recovery? They're really common. They provide people with a lot of pain and discomfort. And maybe just share like why they overlap with eating disorders so much.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's a whole host of GI disturbances that someone might experience, from things happening with your mouth, which is really the start of your GI tract, with teeth, with saliva production, then into your esophagus with reflux. You can have some traumas. People can have trauma responses to swallowing, things like that. And then as we continue downward, when we're looking at the stomach itself, particularly things like hydrochloride, which is what is the acid that enables you to break down food. So there can be disturbances in the concentration of that acid. And also with gastroparesis, which is like the slow emptying of food out of the stomach. And then if we continue downwards, then we're looking at the small intestine, which is responsible for a huge amount of how we actually uptake all of our nutrients is actually done in the small intestine. So we can have disturbances in the gut microbiome, which affects how we digest food. We can have disturbances in enzyme production. So that really important spot where we're really fully digesting and extracting all of the parts of the food. And then the microbiome, of course, extends quite a ways into your intestines. And so it's also responsible for breaking down further, there's further metabolites that are produced because there's obviously more material that's passing through our intestines, right? So any alteration in the microbiome is going to affect what gets produced. And then it's also going to affect very common, which is constipation, bloating, gas, all of which is also altered by hydration. And also altered by the peristalsis, which is the squeezing of the intestines, which is actually how the material, the bolus, gets through your very, very complicated intestinal maze and comes out the other end, right? So then, of course, we're talking about now we've gone through the whole GI tract and now we're at the other end. So then you're going to see some of those issues with, like I said, with constipation or on the other side, like maybe diarrhea or loose stool
And gas is
and
so
gas.
common.
Yes. Gas, right? Yeah, that gas bloating piece that really starts higher up in the gut and then kind of travels through distension. Yeah, and there can also be some stuff around like urinary urgency and lack of hydration can affect or low hydration can affect your kidneys as well, of course. So yeah, I mean, I think that is like a very like kind of just quick overview of what can get altered. And if we think about it, right, as you said, like, why is this so common with eating disorders? Any time that we have any sort of behaviors that are arising that are affecting any area of our digestion, which, as I'm mentioning, starts all the way in your mouth, actually starts with just like your smell, your sense of smell, which gets the salivary glands going. And then you actually have enzymes in your mouth. Amylase is actually in your mouth. So digestion of carbohydrates starts in your mouth. So really, because eating disorders are, of course, a lot to do with food, anytime we're having any sort of disturbance, our GI system is very sensitive, right? There's another huge aspect of this that I know we'll talk about that has to do with, you know, the gut-brain axis. So our GI systems are already quite sensitive, right? Like everyone knows phrases like, you know, my stomach was in knots, I had butterflies, I had a lump in my throat, right? Like those aren't accidents. We have tremendous nerve endings going through the whole of our body. And so if you add on to that eating disorder behaviors and of course trauma that's often present, then we're going to see that the body's kind of responding and is trying to adapt to whatever is going on with the person as far as their food, lack of food, however they're interacting with food. And so then as we start to try to move into recovery often, and even if we're not in recovery, we can really feel that kind of attempt to adjust or to normalize that our GI system, because it's so intricate, right? Like there's so much going on.
Yeah, no, that makes so much sense. I had no idea it was that connected, and also no idea that it starts like you said, with your smell. And did you say your teeth and like everything in your mouth? It really is kind of where GI issues can even start.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Your teeth, your gums, and digestion, like the whole process of starting to like be ready to eat food. Yeah. Relies a lot on smell, on visual to a certain degree. And then, of course, then we have the emotional aspect and the hormonal aspect, which regulates things like appetite, which of course plays into all of this. So it's this extremely complex system that's really, it's also trying to do a lot, right? It's so central. The only way that we're able to survive is by being able to, as humans, as animals, is by being able to extract what we need from food. You know, we aren't plants, as much as I've had clients tell me they wish they could be a plant. They're like, I just want to lay in the sun and then be done with it. But we unfortunately don't have that capacity. So we have to have this extremely, like, as I said, complex system to be able to get what we need so our bodies can function. So and so any sort of disturbance there, the body is constantly trying to find some sort of equilibrium, homeostasis in order to survive. But obviously that, whatever its attempts at equilibrium are necessarily going to be altered in an eating disorder. So then you're going to have symptoms, right? You're going to have things that are there then off, right? Because the body's trying to compensate in some way.
Oh my gosh, that makes so much sense. Yeah, I'm thinking of just different eating disorder behaviors, whether it's restriction or purging or binging, like all those things are going to, like you said, because they affect all those areas, it's going to throw off the homeostasis, and then we're going to get like discomfort and symptoms. And I mean, I've had some clients, and I'm sure I know you have too, that just are in excruciating pain from their GI issues. Like it really complicates the recovery process, because it's not as simple as, well, just eat. Well, okay, but if you are in a level 10 pain every time you eat, then you're also going to have like a trauma response and avoidance to just the act of eating.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that can be really hard, you know, as someone is moving into recovery, right? Like their body has attempted to find an equilibrium in some way, right? And then that can also feel, I've had clients express it almost, it's also psychologically hard, because it almost feels like a punishment of like, oh, I'm trying so hard to do recovery. I'm trying to incorporate new foods. I'm trying to eat more, or, you know, as we said, whatever is going on with that person, or I'm trying to, like reduce purging or anything like that. And now I'm having all this discomfort, and it feels like a punishment for trying to do recovery, which I have so, so much compassion for. Because as you said, it is really can be extremely uncomfortable. And I try to explain to clients, you know, depending on that person's particular history, like trying to explain like why their body might be responding in this way. And to also say that, you know, the body is trying to, like, we're doing something new. So it's trying to learn. It's adapted actually quite brilliantly to allow you to survive. And now it's trying to learn, and it's trying to see like, okay, like, is this really the new way we're doing things? things, or like, is this just temporary? And so I got to be ready to go back to the old way. So that's like a great example is with like hydrochloric acid, right? So the body will reduce hydrochloric acid so order as to not injure someone if there's purging involved. But the process of trying to reduce purging can be really difficult because your body is kept that hydrochloric acid lower. And it's not an instantaneous change, right? The body's still trying to figure out, okay, like, is it okay for me to like increase the acid? Because if I increase the acid, like then I'm doing damage to the esophagus. And since it's all connected, there's all this intercommunication. So like, that's a really good example of how that alteration also takes time. And in the meantime, the person is really uncomfortable, understandably so.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That, I wish like more people, and this is obviously why we're doing this episode. I would just wish both people in recovery understood these intricacies and why their body might be responding, because then I feel like it's easier to have more compassion for the process and not to think you're doing something wrong. Because I mean, I'm really open with my own lived experience, and for sure, there was a lot of GI pain. And I totally remember being at a point where I was like ready to eat a variety of different foods and face fears and things like that, but my body just like wouldn't let me. And it felt like I was so trapped. Like I felt like I was trapped in my eating disorder because of these GI issues. And it was awful. And I see it, and I feel like it lingers, right? Like even like you said, because your system is sort of holding on to, wait, what if we go back into those old ways? I feel like it's common that I notice that GI issues last like years into recovery. It's just, yeah, it's a big hurdle. And I think there's a lack of understanding among providers too, especially therapists, that will just be like, well, just eat. Like, okay, but that's not,
right.
That's not it.
Yeah. Right.
And I know you focus a lot in your work on like trauma and how that impacts food and GI stuff. Can you tell us about that connection between trauma and GI issues?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's another huge piece of how this shows up for a lot of our clients, right? And this is very much, I want to be clear, this is very much a developing field, right? So this is not like set, you know, and a lot of it's also, you know, informed by my own kind of observations. But when we're talking about stress and a history of trauma, chronic stress, and then the kind of secondary, right, effects of some of that, which would be depression, anxiety, right? Like more and more we see this correlation, particularly with what I was talking about in that, like that gut-brain axis correlation, and the ways that, you know, a huge number of the neurotransmitters and the precursors for the neurotransmitters that we that help regulate our mood, not just our appetite, but just our general mood, are created in the gut. So a lot of those metabolites that I was discussing earlier, like, have a tremendous impact on our mood. And then it also appears to kind of go both ways. So that we also see that folks who have, you know, depression, anxiety, seem to have a different microbiota than other people. So I think you're also seeing kind of like compounding of factors. And then, you know, we know that like trauma and chronic stress, right, from varying intersectional identities and like living in America with those identities, you know, it's, we are seeing, and there's obviously an emerging field of science that is saying like, yeah, this affects people's bodies, right? Just the stress of racism, fat phobia, living as a low-income person, like this affects your body. And so of course those effects, we can see that in, you know, in hypertension and all these like very kind of intricate systems, right? They're all chronic effects, right? As opposed to acute effects. So it would then stand to reason that like, of course, you know, there's higher rates of IBS, right? There's higher rates of, yeah, like indigestion, reflux, all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, we also see the ways that that stress can also affect your immune system. You can have higher incidence of autoimmune, which will then could affect things like your pancreas or your gallbladder, all of which are necessary for digestion. So I feel like a lot of times I'm working with clients who have several different things that will affect their digestion. And then we're also attempting to do recovery in and around that. Because as you said, I work with so many folks with trauma histories. That's like one of my specializations. So yeah, you see that all the time.
That is so hard. So then it, like, as I'm hearing you talk, I'm thinking, and obviously just, we know this, but a big part of recovery, right, is getting to that underlying trauma that is having such a pervasive impact on the person's life. But also what I'm hearing is like how it's impacting their GI system and just the ability to eat and live a life more free of eating disorder behaviors. How would you say, like, what are some of the most common GI issues that really complicate the recovery process?
Yeah, so I would say early satiety, so feeling full early.
Where does that
Bloating.
Happen?
That has to do with, that's partly to do with the HCl, with the hydrochloric acid.
Oh.
Yeah, so like if there's not enough hydrochloric acid, the food is kind of sitting in your stomach. It's not getting broken down, which is going to make you feel full really early. And so that's a big reason. It's not the only reason, that's like a primary reason. Sometimes it also has to do with like your stomach, just kind of like the body memory of your stomach itself, and kind of like it's the sensors that it uses when it like expands and contracts. Yeah, and like reflux can sometimes relate to a sense of early satiety, but not always. I would say reflux is relatively common. Early satiety is super common. Reflux, bloating, super, super common. That was part of my own recovery process, was just like, just really, really like heart, very difficult distension, super uncomfortable. So that's a big one. And then I would say, you know, constipation is another big, I see constipation more than the other direction, let's say, you know, definitely both. But yeah, constipation would be another big one that is extremely uncomfortable, right? Because you also are feeling like that also actually contributes to a sense of fullness, right? Because if things are not like exiting, then you start to feel just uncomfortably full, but in kind of a different way than like food in the stomach. Yeah. And I think the other thing too is oftentimes, not to get too in the weeds with like types of foods, right? Because I want to be mindful of that. But like a lot of times, considering that like the foods that are often stigmatized for folks tend to be the ones that are sort of easiest to digest.
Yes.
So that's another important, you know, piece that I hold, right, as the dietitian, is sort of talking through that or like making space, holding space for that, and how scary that can be, that kind of transitioning to some foods that feel really scary and also like I know are going to help so much because they're just a lot easier to digest and break down. Yeah. So, but yeah, but to answer your question, those are the most common things I see.
And some of those easier to digest foods, those are things like simple carbs, like
exactly.
What else would you say are the easiest?
Yeah. So simple carbs is the main one that I'm thinking of there.
Like bread.
And breads.
Tortillas.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Breads, tortillas. I think like oftentimes, yeah. So like high fiber foods, things like a lot of like roughage, right? Also like fats help. They do slow digestion, which is an important thing to balance, but they do also help the food move through the system. So that's another one that can be really challenging because I'm trying to get people to like add more fats in because that creates a more comfortable digestive experience oftentimes.
Lube to the system, I like to think of it. Lube to
yeah,
intestine.
Exactly.
Intestine.
Exactly. Yeah. Good old lube. And then of course, for some folks, getting adequate hydration can be really challenging if like restriction of liquids is an aspect, or well, for a bunch of reasons, hydration can be challenging for someone actually. So that's another one that often we work on because that's hugely important for constipation, like cannot overstate water, or the tea or whatever, you know, like, so yeah, those are some of the foods. Yeah, absolutely. Like those simple carb foods for sure.
And very helpful. I feel like, and maybe it's different now, but when I was in recovery, I was like very nervous to bring these things up to my team because they're not the most comfortable to talk about. Like, and if you don't know that they're common issues, it feels even more, I don't know, taboo to talk about. Like,
hey, I haven't
Yes.
pooped in a week. Like, what's going on?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. And I do think, you know, and for anyone who's a provider listening out there, particularly dietetics providers, like, please ask your clients. Please, please, please. You don't have to ask them every single time. I'm depending, you know, maybe they have other stuff to talk about, but like, please be like regularly, just normalize the idea of being like, so how are things with your bowels? Like, how are you pooping? How's that going for you? Like, how's your digestion feeling? Like, what's going on there? Just, you know, I think I try to be mindful of like someone that's like, you know, in like a more recovered space, like, let's check in. Let's just normalize you being able to talk to me about your poop. Like, and when people do bring it up, I also try to be very like, oh, yes, absolutely. Let's talk about, I want to know all about it. Tell me all about it. Tell me if your fart smells weird. Like, let's talk about it. Like, because that'll happen to you, especially with like, if there's any sort of like, you know, gallbladder, any history, or as you increase fats, sometimes the farts get kind of wild. They can get kind of
That's so
wild out.
funny. I always say,
So, yeah.
I joke with some of my colleagues, like, you can't be an eating disorder activist if you're not fart positive, because like it's just so
Exactly.
true.
Yes. Let's normalize fart convos. Yeah, but it's a huge part. It's a huge part of recovery. It's just, you know, farting your way through it. Yeah. And so, and that's the other thing is like, and if I don't ask, then I can't know, and then I can't help. And you know, to a certain extent, like there is. And I know, you know, I know we're going to talk about this in a minute, probably, but like, there's also the part of just being able to like hold space for that, because there are certain things that like I cannot alleviate. I do not have. I can help. I can try to, you know, make it more bearable, more manageable. But there are certain things that like until your body starts, and like you said, this can take a long time. Like, there's certain things that it's just your body's going to have to get used to and ready. I had some pretty gnarly constipation for years, 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 and the farts to go with it. Yeah. So
It
it does take a while.
does. So I guess, yeah, moving into that, what are some of those practical tools that, can help with some of that discomfort when it comes to even before, during, after meals when there's GI pain? What are some things you help clients with?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one thing that I work with clients on, so some people seem to find it helpful to be able to have like a small like candy, or so like a Starburst or a Jolly Rancher. Sometimes if folks also deal with nausea, I have them buy gingins, the hard candy gingins. But anyway, the point is that if you can start saliva production in the mouth, particularly with something that's containing glucose, right, for the amylase, it's actually going to help as you then have your meal to aid, because it's going to actually produce more gastric juice and more secretions. And so that's like one thing that definitely helps folks, also helps them feel hungry, usually, to actually, like, if it's hard to access a sense of hunger, that can be really helpful. I think also, so if we start, yeah, if we start at the top, make our way down. So, other things that I will encourage folks to do sometimes is to hum or to sing along to something prior to eating, because that vibration from that like gut brain axis perspective, like that kind of like humming will stimulate the vagus nerve, which actually helps someone feel a little more calm. So, to also try to do some good breathing to like, if they need to kind of like move their neck or their head and like orient to the space that they're in. So all of those things can really help. Sometimes people find, depending on the person, they can also find gargling helpful, because again, it's kind of stimulating that part of the throat. So yeah, so all kind of just like trying to add some vibration to like the mouth, the throat, the chest, to sort of
Because of how
settle.
that like regulates the nervous system too.
Yes, exactly. And if we're in fighter, and this is the other piece, right? Because oftentimes eating is quite stressful for when you're trying to do recovery. And so if you're stressed, you're also your body sending all these signals, fight or flight signals, and shockingly, fight or flight has a tremendous influence on our digestion, right? If we're in fight or flight, we are pulling blood away. So the one place we're not getting blood is to our digestive system, because it's going to our heart or our muscles to be able to like run or fight or hide or whatever. So like the one place you're actually not getting a whole lot of energy is to your digestive system. So to do some things that could try to help regulate or ground you to, so we actually have enough blood flow so that things are going to move. So that's a big one. So sometimes I also suggest, you know, I'm very mindful of price for folks. So, you know, I'm not going to shout out specific things here because I would want someone to consult with their team, but, you know, sometimes folks can get like digestive bitters, other sorts of things that can help, HCL that you can take orally that can help with a low acid for that kind of gastroparesis, slow stomach emptying. Again, that's a tough one. There's very little that I've ever had someone like get it and it's like, oh yeah, this fixed it. Like right. It can help. And then certainly for the microbiome, we can look at probiotics, and depending on like that person's like medical history and like what their particular eating disorder looks like, there's certain strains of probiotics that I recommend over others, depending on the person. So there will be kind of different blends there. I oftentimes, if someone has decent health insurance, I will oftentimes, if there's some really resistant digestive stuff happening, I will encourage them to try to see if they can get checked for SIBO, which is small intestine bacterial overgrowth, which is super common in eating disorders and can create tremendous amounts of bloating, distension. And there is actually like, you can get antibiotics for that. You can also, there's an herbal protocol for that. But it's really helpful because that's a super common one. And there is stuff that like we can really do for that. That's like, oh, wow, that's really helpful. really made a difference. So yeah. So if someone can access a test, I will encourage them if they're having really severe symptoms. H. pylori is actually in the stomach. So H. pylori is what can happen if there's, is again, that stomach acid. And so if there's elevated H. pylori, then you're more likely to get ulcers. If there's like not enough acid, and, or some people just seem to have elevated H. pylori, even if their stomach acid is normal. But yeah. So H. pylori has to do with your stomach. Yeah. And so there's also like, sometimes we can have folks do like B12, for example, that can really help. And B12 is primarily, a lot of other things, as I was saying, are taken up by the body in your small intestine, but B12 is primarily extracted in your stomach by intrinsic factor. So if, again, if there's like stomach issues, then you may want to take B12. So I'll have, and that also just helps with like energy and all sorts of really important people. Regulate mood. So those are the primary thing. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I'm missing. Oh, and then just like I'll sometimes teach people some like poses, like some wind relieving poses for that windy situation. And, you know, I will recommend Miralax because it's a non-stimulant laxative. That is, I do not encourage people to take stimulant laxatives, obviously, regardless of whether you have a laxative history, not a great idea.
Because and then just tell me why that's, or tell listeners why that's not a good idea, maybe.
Yeah. So a stimulant laxative versus what's called an osmotic laxative. So stimulant laxatives, your body, and I'm not, maybe there is research on this, I just know the outcome, but the outcome is that your body tends to become dependent on the stimulant, regardless of whether you have a stimulant history. So if you are using a stimulant laxative, even if it's like as on the bottle, your body will start to become dependent on that. And like, what we're trying to do is like, get your body have some sort of like of its own regulatory system so that we don't super want it to now have a new thing that it's dependent on that we have to then take you off of and try to get you to like be able to, you know, poop without it. Right. So yeah. So I generally, you know, it'll be rare that I would recommend that to someone. They can use the, oh my gosh, my word is escaping me. It's a suppository that is glycerin.
Okay.
So sometimes you can use that if things are pretty gnarly, again, because it's not a stimulant. Yeah. And so, yeah. So wind relieving poses, hot compresses on the stomach, like gentle walking can be helpful. And then of course, the hydration piece, and then really trying to like look at acceptance of maybe some foods that feel really scary, but that might be helpful for very helpful to and easier to digest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those are, I think, some of the things that come. There might be some other stuff that I'm forgetting, but those are kind of the things that I work with most often for folks. And also like sometimes I'll have people do like a tea, like nausea. Nausea is a big one, if I didn't mention that. So tea, like ginger tea, mint tea, stomach ease, some of that kind of stuff. Just again, to help. Very little of this is going to, I just want folks to know if they're in a lot of discomfort, like just know that it will help, but it's very rarely have I seen something just, completely obliterate the issue.
Right.
But what we're trying to do, which is all of eating disorder recovery, is just stress tolerance, right? Like we're trying mm-hmm. to like help you be in a place where it's like, okay, I can handle this. I can mm-hmm. do this and still eat. I can do this. And that's really what this is we're trying to like, I'm trying to provide you with enough things for your body so that it's like, okay, this sucks and it's really uncomfortable, but like I'm okay in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so really trying to find some things or combinations of things that can help that person. Cause as you mentioned, that physical distress can be very, very high, very unbearable.
It is. And I'm just thinking about how, again, like having this knowledge is so key because yeah, otherwise it feels like you're doing something wrong and oh, maybe I should just like not eat then. But then I remember being in a space where, and this is true, I know for a lot of people with eating disorders, it's like your digestive system sort of gets to a point where it hurts either way. And so if you want to, you know, reduce eating disorder behaviors and have more long-term comfort over discomfort, then it's like, you know, slowly working through some of these pains. Sadly, I wish there was an easier way, like you mentioned, because it's just, it's horrible. And it causes a lot of like mental distress because then sometimes like you're planning your whole day around managing this pain.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't get talked about or acknowledged enough.
Yes. Yeah. I think, yep. No notes. I completely disagree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it's acknowledged enough. I think, yeah. And I mean, I don't think there's enough like work being done. I know like Dr. Gaudiani is doing a lot of good, you know, work on some of these protocols, but it's hard. It's also hard to find medical professionals who have any knowledge of like what, you know, cause I'm not super well versed in like a prescription space, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I know what I can do with herbs and minerals and food and things that, you know, you can buy like, you know, over the counter. But yeah, but I think there's a lot out there that like maybe could be helpful that we may not know about. Yeah. But, you know, I think I'm also mindful of like people being like overprescribed stuff as well. So there's mm-hmm. it's not that simple. But I think mostly it's the idea of being able to talk about it and to have folks kind of hold space and believe you. I think that's the other thing is I think it's oftentimes folks feel like, right, the problem's being sort of minimized. Of mm-hmm. Like, it can't be that bad. Like, just eat. Like, no, it can be like really debilitating.
Mm-hmm. I've even heard providers, you know, blame the client like, oh, they're just being manipulative. They're trying to get out of eating this meal plan. And it's like, no, you need to listen to your client.
Absolutely.
And even if someone is being, let's say, dishonest about some symptom, there's a reason why. They probably don't feel safe for whatever reason. So why is the answer then to make them feel worse?
Yes.
I know you help
Absolutely.
Clients a lot in terms of feeling safe in their body too. Like I know you do a lot of like grounding before, during, after meals. Like, is there anything around that you would recommend?
Yeah. I mean, I think kind of some of the things I talked about with kind of like that humming kind of grounding to also just, like some of the things kind of the the using like peripherals can be really helpful. Even if it's just like kind of like looking out the corner of your eyes, tracing your eyes around the edges of the room can be really grounding. And I think to just, you know, also to kind of get a sense of like how and when you want to use distractions, right, to be able to eat. I think that's huge. I think to like kind of have this like puritanical view that like you have to just like eat without distraction is like kind of rough. So I do think that it can be sometimes, or having like a fidget with you so that you can kind of like take a break and use your fidget. And yeah, and I think, you know, trying to like co-regulate. So if you can eat with someone else, and that's definitely like what a lot of my function is when I do supported meals with folks, is just kind of like co-regulation. And yeah, so I think if you can have someone who will eat with you in kind of a non-judgmental way, that's extraordinarily helpful, as is, yeah, I think a certain amount of distraction to the extent that you're not dissociated, right? So like you're still try to be present in some way. And then I think afterwards, and sometimes some people find it helpful to just kind of have an intention of like, you know, whether that's just like a moment of like, whether you want to just like offer like gratitude, right? Or to just say like, I'm just going to do my best at this meal, something like that. Or I'm going to try to, you know, pay attention to, like sometimes I encourage folks to like, if it's possible, to try to pay attention to like something about the meal. Or to like notice if they're drifting, like let me pay attention to my feet, like tap my feet, use my fidget, do a little like, if I need to like tap my hands or like hold on to like a cold glass so that I can sort of just try to be present, a little present. But you know, it's, you don't always have to be 100% present. Like that's, especially with trauma, like that's not a requirement. So yeah, so like kind of these like small ways of grounding. And then afterwards, yeah, I mean, to be able to, I would say, even if you're at work or something, to try to have just like a moment of two where you just breathe. Maybe you're able to go into the bathroom and like kind of put some cold water on the back of your neck. If you're not at work, or you have a moment to like step outside, something like that. You know, I think like all of those things can really help someone. Yeah. To ground to some degree. Yeah.
Those are all very helpful. And it's also like, doing all that grounding is really validating to yourself that this is hard. This is uncomfortable. It's not as easy as just eat. And that's okay. And like this discomfort doesn't mean I'm unsafe either. This is a very normal part of recovery for so many people. So, because it can feel really unsafe when your body starts reacting in these ways, like it's scary. Absolutely. And especially if you have a history of trauma, feeling out of control in that process and not knowing what's going on. It's just terrible.
Yeah. 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 And I think also, I think I'm going to try to figure out how to put this into words, but I think also holding space for like, it's not always that you're going to get to the end of the meal and you're going to be like, wow, I did it. Hooray. You know, like, you may have a lot of conflicted feelings. You may have a lot of parts around that. You might be like mad, sad, confused, angry, sort of hopeful, like you have a lot of feelings. So I think also, I guess I also try to normalize that, like, that's okay. Cause I think then you can create a lot of shame and distress, which is going to take you out of being grounded and will absolutely affect your digestion. So just also to be like, okay, like whatever's here is okay. And yes. I did do this thing, and that is something, and that's some part of me maybe can recognize like that was cool, but it's okay if it doesn't feel really easy to plug into that in the moment. That's okay.
Right. Yeah. And I think for so many people, it does usually feel worse before it starts to feel better. And
100%.
That's a really good point of like, kind of accepting from the get-go, like you might not feel great after this. This can be very triggering in so many ways because there's so many, you know, I think well-intended recovery accounts that just post about, oh my gosh, like I just ate this blah, blah, blah. And everything was great. I'm so happy and living my life, but they don't show like the hard moments maybe that it took to get to that place where you are just like in tears, like having panic attacks, like, it's a lot. So
yeah,
I love that you just
make
space for all those emotions. And
right,
for anyone listening, just know that No one is just like happily moving through every step of recovery.
Right. Absolutely. And yeah, and I think that's a when I talk about the grounding or when I talk about that with clients too, is like, yeah, to try to, if and when you can, find safe spaces to, like, you know, maybe you need to like go, maybe you don't want to take, maybe you need to scream in a pillow when you're done, right? Maybe, you know, I teach people to like do this thing where you like take a heavy book and you like slam it down on a bed or a surface that can handle it, right? Like, and like maybe you really need to like do like a major like somatic like release because you're mad, right? Like, you know, so there's this idea of trying to like trying to some extent process a little like whatever's arising. I think, yeah, is huge.
Yeah, it makes sense because, like, if we're talking about trauma and like fight, flight, freeze, fawn, you know, all those responses, moving through those in a way that isn't with eating disorder behavior seems like it's
Right.
going to be really important.
Exactly.
So let's get that
Exactly.
anger out instead of taking it out on your body and doing whatever, you
Right.
know, like that makes so
Right.
much sense.
Yep. And I talk to my clients a lot about that, of just like, you know, all we're trying to create here is a little space. That's it. That's it. Even if ultimately, like in that moment, it feels too overwhelming and then like a behavior comes into play. I tell them, like, even if there's like a teeny little bit of space, that's all. That's all I'm looking for right now. And then we just kind of go from there. And a lot of times that grounding can be the space, or that like screaming to the pillar or whatever can be the space, right? Like, as you said, to try to get a little bit of distance between the behavior and like all of the things that originally, that was the purpose of the behavior, right? Like, didn't just come out of nowhere, was to try to, you know, protect or serve or regulate or various and assorted reasons, which is a whole other
Agreed.
podcast episode.
Yeah, no, but I'm glad you bring that up because it is like so common where we're just sort of helping clients gradually increase that window of tolerance. Even if you still binge, purge, restrict, or do the whatever, if for 1 minute you try like deep breathing or smashing a plate or calling a friend for support, and you still do the behavior, that's okay. Like,
That's
there
okay.
doesn't need to be like
Exactly.
a morality attached to that. And
Yep.
you tried something different. That's amazing. That's huge. I love that we're on the same page with that and just like
Yeah.
meeting clients where they are, because recovery is a
Exactly. Yeah.
long journey.
It's a long journey, and there is no perfect recovery. It doesn't
No.
exist. It's
No.
not. And definitely, if you feel like the things that you're looking at on social media purport to have a perfect recovery, I would encourage you to perhaps look elsewhere.
Unfollow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
Yeah.
thank you so much, H. Can you remind people where they can find you and more about your work and any updates on your practice you want to share with us?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And thank you. This is, well, I mean, as you mentioned, we're like for real life friends. So it's always a delight to talk to you. Yeah, so everyone can find me at Pando, Pando wellness.org, because that was the domain. So pandowellness.org, you'll find me there. I have a not super active, but hopefully soon more active Instagram at Pando Wellness. Yeah, and you know, I am always looking to take on clients. And I'm also starting to do some more supervision with clinicians who are interested in growing in their practice, or if they're interested in getting into this and want to, yeah, find a space where they can really talk about how to be a social justice aligned eating disorder dietitian, harm reductionist. So, yeah, I'm very open to anyone who would like to reach out to me there. And yeah, I think that's it. All right.
Awesome. Well, you are the best, and thank you so much for being on Body
Likewise.
Justice.
Thank you.